This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we will learn about a 10-year pilot project that's now underway at Freedom Park in Naples that will explore whether it's possible to remove excess nutrients from the environment by rotating land use between agricultural and wetlands. But first, according to a University of Pennsylvania Annenberg Public Policy Center study in which more than 1,000 adults were surveyed late last year, 37% did not know what the First Amendment was about. Still, it is the amendment that is cited repeatedly in political discourse, Facebook rants, and at dinner tables, and it's used by all sides when it suits an argument or an aggrievement. Between the ongoing issue of whether NFL players have the right to protest by kneeling during the national anthem or whether a baker has the right to refuse to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple, and now the U.S. press secretary being asked to leave a restaurant, First Amendment-related stories have found themselves front and center in our national conversation. So we thought we'd bring in two people who spend a lot of time thinking about the First Amendment and what it means. I'm joined today in studio by Ron Feimster. He's a journalism professor at Florida Southwestern State College in Fort Myers. He's also the advisor to the new FSW student newspaper called The Compass. Ron, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Hi, it's great to be here.
I'm also joined by Dr. Peter Bergerson, who is a political science professor here at Florida Gulf Coast University. Peter, welcome back to the show as well.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be here.
We especially want to hear from you today. Do you think NFL owners telling players they cannot protest on the field during the national anthem is infringing on their constitutional rights? To join our conversation about the First Amendment, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So for starters, let's read the exact language of the First Amendment. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Peter, I want to start with you. What exactly does the First Amendment cover? And is it possible to get a straightforward answer to that question, or does it always depend on who you ask?
The latter. It depends on who you ask and their particular political persuasion. I think this is evident in major league or professional sports today. Look at the difference, particularly between NFL owners and NBA owners and how they see the role of their teams and their athletes in relationship to kneeling or protesting at the start of the game for the Star-Spangled Banner. And in addition, we know from numerous court decisions, and Ron will, I'm sure, know these well, that even the Supreme Court itself has differing opinions on what the First Amendment means. And so it's not a surprise that a significant number of people are really unsure of the definitive meaning of what the First Amendment says.
Mm-hmm. Ron, I saw you nod when the NFL-NBA comparison came up. Can you give us a debrief on that?
Yes. I was thinking of the situation when LeBron James and Kyrie Irving went to play in Brooklyn, and they chose to wear T-shirts that said, I can't breathe. And this was right after the grand jury had failed to indict the or had chosen not to indict the police officer who had put Eric Garner into a stranglehold in mm-hmm. July of 2014. So this was in December of 2014. And they I believe the coach of the Nets came out and said that he was really happy that his players participated in that because life is bigger than basketball and people mm-hmm. should get out there and express their opinions.
Which has been now conversely reflected with the NFL in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, we have two players right now, Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, who are seasoned pros who are not signed with any team, are free agents, and they are trying to sue the league and say that there's been collusion against them to keep them from being employed because they were the first two players to kneel mm-hmm. and to kneel during the anthem. And you know, it's very different for President Trump to come out and say these guys should be fired for kneeling if, you know, all presidents have always expressed opinions about sports. Barack Obama would put out his bracket every year and essentially say, these are the 32 teams or the 63 teams that I think should lose. And, you know, and if he were saying Colin Kaepernick throws too many interceptions and Eric Reid misses too many tackles as a defensive back, I think they should be fired, that would be one thing. But it's a completely different claim to come out and say these guys are being unpatriotic and therefore they should be fired.
Yeah, that seems to be one of the significant differences with at least in today's political climate and environment. The President of the United States has judged these pro football players anyway and others as far as that matter goes. Mocking people has been one of his daily, almost daily routines as far as the use of the First Amendment.
Well, we get into some hair splitting. It's actually pretty night and day sometimes too. When it comes to freedom of speech, there are some forms of speech that are just not covered. Things like obscenity, threats, yelling fire in a crowded theater, common guidepost. But people are now angry saying that private sector backlash is what's infringing on rights. An example being Roseanne Barr's tweets. And then getting fired as a result, and then the NFL players like we're talking about. People are conflating government's infringement on rights, but where is that line when it comes to non-governmental repercussions for people that are expressing themselves? I'll leave that to either of you.
You know, I don't think that the Supreme Court anyway has really drawn the line or has really determined whether or not a private corporation or company can be held liable for violating the First Amendment. This would be a very novel case if it would, and under the conditions I think of the present court, they wouldn't take a case like that. So it's purely the discretion of the owners.
Mm-hmm. Ron, what do you think about private sector being held to the same standards as an amendment? Because the amendment is Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion and therefore. But is the NFL saying something? That's not anybody making a law, but there is a political person in power that's making a statement on it.
Well, you know, if you're going to talk hair splitting, and I think we probably should at some points, because most of the interesting Supreme Court decisions have to do with two rights that are in conflict. I mean, one person's right is balanced against another person's right. And in the case of the NFL, on strict terms, I think the owners have the right to employ the people they want to and not employ the people they want to, and that's just the way it is. Whether or not the president should be reaching into a private sector organization and saying this guy should be fired for this reason or that reason is – you know, that's a not even a public policy question. That's kind of an ethics question, and I think it would be a very partisan question at this point. But in terms of when people have freedom of speech at the workplace, oddly enough, it's in government jobs, because a person who is an employee of the government is actually allowed to speak up in the public interest in his role as a citizen if it conflicts with his role as a government. And this is something that the court is always trying to balance. There's a case, I believe it's called the Pickering case, that had to do with public education. And there was always a question of, like, how important is this objection that a person is making to policy, and how close does it come, on the other hand, to something that we would think of as insubordination? And, you know, my question is with the NFL, you know, the NFL is a really privileged organization. They operate under an antitrust exemption. They play in huge stadiums that we pay for with our tax dollars in most cases. And they are very closely tied to the government in ways that many private businesses are not. And I think that someone could raise a very interesting question about how intermingled with the government is the NFL, and to what extent does this right to speak up bleed into the NFL. I think that would be a losing case, frankly, but it's at least a plausible argument.
Worth looking at.
Yeah,
there's no question that there is an association, companionship. There's as you suggested, Ron, there's legislation that has given them, in essence, a monopoly of sorts.
Exactly.
But again, you know, a strict interpretation of the Constitution when it says Congress shall make no law, that's pretty definite, as opposed to the Dallas Cowboys making a law or the NFL making a law.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a winning case. I'm just saying that we should think about their special status.
Sure.
There is some interplay there that is definitely worth looking at when making any of these conversations happen. We have a call coming in from Melissa in Naples. Melissa, what would you like to say?
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I went to a state school here in Florida, and we ran into a lot of problems because I was part of organizations that would organize demonstrations, and we had free speech zones. We had zones that at our school – free speech was only allowed in certain zones. And I had friends that were actually detained and arrested by university police for expressing free speech outside of those zones. So I just wanted to know what – we always wondered what that meant, and I just wondered your take on that.
Yeah, it seems like you would generally consider all of America to be a free speech zone. Melissa, thank you for your question. I'll have the answer off the phone. Just give us a listen on the air. What do you think about free speech zones in schools? Why do you have to have a zone set up? Isn't the whole U.S. that way?
Well, I think the freedom of speech issue is primarily an issue of content. The school or the government should not regulate the content of speech, but they are allowed under the law to regulate the time and the manner and the place and, frankly, the volume. I mean, they can say that you're allowed to protest, but the decibel limit is going to be this many, and you're allowed to protest, but you can't do it at this particular time. And once again, I think that many of the objections would be whether or not these particular rules are applied equally across all types of demonstrations. In other words, if they don't allow the Muslim student organization to demonstrate, but under the same circumstances they do allow the black student organization to demonstrate, then they're not applying the law equally. And I think that would be the issue in most of these cases, not the existence of the zone.
I would agree with Ron. The Supreme Court in a 1971 decision ruled that the government cannot regulate the content of speech, but they can regulate the time, the place, the manner of the speech. They also have left there must be also ample alternative channels for communication as well that is part of it. And in essence, the Supreme Court wanted to or at least said, quote, it has to be a marketplace of ideas. That was an exact quote that the 71 decision brought out.
I just got back from the Public Radio News Director Incorporated's convention that they had last week. It was in Philadelphia, and there was an attorney there who made a presentation. His name's Jonathan Peters. He specializes in First Amendment law, and one of the things that he said that really stood out is First Amendment rights and freedom of speech does not exist to protect popular speech. It exists to protect unpopular speech. And he pointed to the history of why we even have a First Amendment. He talked about the seditious libel laws in England, in which the laws kept people from expressing dissent back in revolutionary times, that being the impetus for why we did that here in the United States. Let's go back to the very pre-beginning. What did England do to people who said things they didn't like about the king?
Well, one thing they did was they closed down their newspapers, and they could also arrest them. And this is actually happening in other countries around the world right now. We are a very privileged state, the United States, because we have very, very strong laws that protect the press. And, you know, I would also point out that it was a very unruly press that was being protected. It was not the press that we've had since the 1830s when people were reporting fact. People were largely reporting opinion, special interest, commentary. It was like slow motion Twitter.
Slow-mo Twitter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it wasn't – so when I think about, you know, the very, very difficult news environment that we have now with lots of fake news and lots of unverifiable or unverified stories. This is actually the press that was being protected under the Constitution, and we should very cautiously decide that we are not going to protect people who are simply bad journalists. Being a bad journalist is not against the law.
Yeah. Originally, the freedom of the press, and for a long time, and for that matter somewhat still, really only did apply to newspapers. Mm-hmm. It did not apply to radio, television. And, you know, there's some question as we go forward about the freedom of press as it might apply to social media, Facebook, Twitter, and those entities. And, you know, there's been not only a question of content, but the question of privacy that, we know has been raised. And so, that becomes very important. And keep in mind the Congress was involved in legislating radio and television, particularly television, when they had the
fairness doctrine.
Yeah, exactly.
Equal
time provision. And when the FCC changed the equal time provision, that just really opened the floodgates for anybody's opinion, particularly on radio and social media.
And TV, you have complete.
Yeah, I mean, when we went from 3 channels to 300 channels, this was the beginning of people being able to present quite biased or specialized information and to be able to hold an audience large enough to make a living.
Well, when it comes to private sector concerns about abridging someone's freedom of speech, that's kind of the linchpin word in the First Amendment as far as freedom of speech when it comes to legal proceedings. The advent of the internet and social media, it's really taken an enormous amount of power away from the government. And it can and does censor content on various platforms. Do you see that as being something that may eventually need regulating by the government so that it is guaranteed to be free expression? Because there are videos that, for example, Google pulled in certain countries in Saudi Arabia that they said that the government asked them to take these videos down, but the government did not. They just kind of arbitrarily and privately made that decision to take that media off of the internet. Do you foresee something coming down the road eventually here in the United States in which these platforms are regulated to not abridge people's freedom of speech?
Well, I think that's a hard, really a difficult to answer or ask. I think there is a lot of political pressure today, particularly in Washington and internationally, frankly, on the content issue that would have been involved. My guess is that in Saudi Arabia, you're right, that they just did it and then asked Google to acquiesce, which they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think there are developing stories like this in the United States. Over the weekend, a very good story written by the Center for Investigative Reporting and Reveal came out. Full disclosure, it was written by one of my J school classmates, and I'm confident in the veracity of the story for that reason. Yeah, and but anyway, he wrote a story that said there were migrant children in the custody of ICE that were being injected with psychotropic drugs to calm them down. And it was a very, very difficult story, and it was based on a lawsuit against the Justice Department. And the lawsuit was up, in Document Cloud. You could read the lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And they advertised their story on Facebook, and Facebook took down the ads because they said it was political speech. And they went in and said, well, this new attempt to regulate algorithms is going too far because we are not advertising a political point of view. We are advertising a story that has political implications, and you should adjust that. So I think the pressure that was put on Facebook over the last several months to get their algorithms under control is going to be something that will have to be solved empirically. It went too far in this case, and in other cases, allegedly when the Russian bots were posting during the election, it didn't go far enough to regulate speech.
It kind of feels like we're back where we started back in the late 1700s. They passed the, you know, the First Amendment. It's there. And then in 1798, Congress with John Adams passed a seditious libel act of our own here in the United States. It had a limitation on the amount of time, but it was passed over with you know, the theory of worries about French influence in advance of a war. Mm-hmm. But it was also to silence supporters of Thomas Jefferson, who was running against Adams. And that particular seditious libel punished criticism of the president, Congress, but not the vice president, who happened to be Jefferson, mm-hmm. With a $2,000 fine. If you think about that back then, that was quite a bit of money.
A huge amount.
Saying anything critical with an expiration date after that next election, it expired. So it did even – it went away. But that was just a few years after the First Amendment was created. Do you feel like we're back in that kind of a situation? And is there a possibility of something like that happening again and coming from the government? Right now we have it coming from private sector with, you know, Facebook saying that's too political and that's – but it's actually a news story. Mm-hmm. Do you think the government – are we at risk of the government stepping in and trying to pass something like that?
I say no. But.
Yeah, I would be very surprised. And if it did pass, if such a bill were to pass, I would be very surprised if any Supreme Court would not strike it down.
Yeah, I would agree with Ron on that. That the politics of the 1798 Alien and Sedition Act, as you suggested, Julie, was really a political, specifically oriented or directed. That doesn't mean that there isn't the political debate or discussion similar to that going on, maybe, but I don't see any piece of legislation going that far. I don't see that at all.
No. I don't know. These times, it's hard to tell. We do have a message from a listener via Facebook named Jimmy saying, football players are being paid to play football. Team owners are within their rights to refuse to allow players to make political statements while being paid to perform. First Amendment does not say that anyone can say anything at any time. Players can make political statements on their own time. So that was a comment coming in via Facebook. And we also have a caller on the line discussing the players in the NFL. Albert from Sanibel. Albert, what would you like to say?
Yes. The question at the beginning of the program was, do these football players have the legal right to doing what they're doing under the First Amendment? I would say they certainly do. On the other hand, does an employer have the right to tell an employee not to do something that would be detrimental to his business? And I would say, yes, the owners do have that right.
Okay, well,
so therefore, they're legally right, but maybe commercially wrong.
Yeah, well, thank you, Albert, so much for your comment. I really appreciate it. This NFL story is it continues to spin. I know we're heading into baseball season. Where are we at? We're in baseball season now.
We're almost at the All-Star break.
Yeah, we're in there. Through. So we're still talking about football this far out. So clearly it resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I guess one of the things that I've heard a lot of debate or discussion about is the fact that the President of the United States is the one who really has instigated this particular debate and discussion regarding his interpretation of the right of the players to express their opinions, and that he also has challenged the owners and the NFL to respond in kind as he would like to see it. That I think is is one of the concerns. I think that your Facebook and caller for that, they were, you know, absolutely on cue. But it's at least from my perspective, is it a proper role for the President of the United States to invoke his opinion on the First Amendment rights of individuals?
You know, it's interesting. We're nearing the end of our time. We only have about a minute and a half left. But we didn't even get to talk about the freedom of religion and the bakers baking the cake or not baking the cake for people for a same-sex wedding. We didn't even get to touch on on that one. So we can
we'll happily come back.
We can definitely come back. We can
Today the Supreme Court ruled about florists out in the state of Washington and providing the florists to same-sex couples. And they remanded it to back to the Court of Appeals or the state court system. But, yeah, this is an issue that is – look, there has been, as Ron and I talked about before the show, you know, there's been multiple Supreme Court decisions about what the First Amendment means.
It's an interesting topic, and it's going to continue to evolve, especially in this political climate.
Yeah.
But
we haven't seen the last of it. That's certain.
But that element that you brought up in the beginning was to protect unpopular speech and protect those that are not in a position of power. I think it's an important thing to remember. But that's all the time we got for this part of the show. But I want to thank my guest, Ron Feimster, as professor of journalism at Florida Southwestern State College. Ron, thanks for being here today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And also Dr. Peter Bergerson. He's a political science professor at Florida Gulf Coast University. Peter, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Oh, thanks, Julie. It was great for me.
When we return, we meet an FGCU professor who thinks he might have an out-of-the-box way to remove excess nutrients from the environment. That story is next. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.
For the United States of America.